tell you how we've used some of our syndromic surveillance data in Indiana to do some utilization analyses and describe some interesting statistics. Data is a wonderful thing. It tells you, gives you information that you wouldn't otherwise imagine or believe. And as we contemplate these large-scale system redesigns through the Nationwide Health Information Network, what ONC is contemplating, understanding the realities of what happens in healthcare on the ground are crucial to designing that system. And so at the end of my talk, we're talking about syndromic surveillance data, but I think the data I'm going to present to you actually informs policy around how we design the Nationwide Health Information Network. And so this is sort of an interesting way where we can take surveillance data and help inform national policy. Let me start with some background. We know that patients seek care in a variety of settings, and this is true in the emergency department as well. The patient's record, as a consequence, is all over the place. It's not in a single hospital, it's not in a single clinic. The fragmentation of healthcare is a real problem. And so ED care is particularly problematic because patients are seen everywhere. Now there's this notion, I don't know if some of you have heard this expression, but a lot of folks say, well, all healthcare is local, like all politics is local, all healthcare is local. I'm gonna try to convince you at the end of this talk that actually, no, it's not. And again, this has particular issues for the emergency department. I did this work with Dr. J.T. Fennell at the Regan Street Institute. J.T. is an emergency department physician, so he has a particular interest in this. And we simply, really what we started with is we just wanted to look at how do patients move across the region, across a community. So more background. Patients are seen everywhere, fragmentation of care, and I think I made the connection back here. We'd like to benefit from an integrated healthcare system like the Nationwide Health Information Network to help bridge this. But if we want to solve the problem of fragmentation, we have to know how the data is fragmented, right? And I don't know that many people or many studies have been done to look at how data is fragmented. And there's been some discussions within ONC and folks contemplating the Nationwide Health Information Network about the type of architecture that we should build for the system. Now, I'm going to get back to the surveillance data here in a little bit, but I wanted to set this up. If we're going to develop systems that solve the problems, we have to understand the problem first. That's the bottom line. So back in 2003, we have a health information exchange. And let me just very briefly, the Indiana Network for Patient Care is the nation's longest tenured, most comprehensive health information exchange. We have dozens of hospitals connected. We receive over 2 million transactions a day. We have over 20 million patient registrations in the system, over 12 million unique patients, all sorts of data. We do contribute to BioSense as well, although apparently we don't contribute to pharmacy and radiology data. So, big health information exchange. Back in 2003, when we were a bit smaller, we did an analysis of the central Indiana region to look at how patients move around in the emergency departments. And it turned out back then, of patients who had more than one visit, so two or more visits, 25% of them were seen at other healthcare organizations. This was a limited study looking at central Indiana alone, so we're probably missing some data. And so we wanted to look at the broader statewide picture. And of course, we wanted to describe the overall patient movement over a 3-year period. So how did we do this? I'm gonna walk you through our high-level methods, and then I'll go through details. We took syndromic surveillance data from the Indiana FESTS system, public health emergency surveillance system, will receive data from over 100 hospitals in real time, validated those messages, took those transactions and found unique encounters, and again, I'm going to go through the details here. Then we found unique patients within that system, and then we had a final data set that we analyzed. So, FAS, Public Health Emergency Surveillance System. Since 2004, the state of Indiana has been receiving ED visit data. The Regan Streep Institute has been helping ISDH with this process. We requested, as a health information exchange, we have about 70 hospitals who are signed up for our information exchange. We have 106 hospitals who are participating in FES. So there's about 36 hospitals who aren't in our information exchange. We go to the 76 and say, would you like to participate in this study? They said yes. For the other 36, we went to the State Department of Health and said, could we use this data for this analysis? They went through their review process and said, we could use that data. So that's the data for this process. The data is messy. There are lots of errors in it. We had to do a lot of validation. So clinical information systems generate a lot of transactions that are identical to previous transactions. They might be non-compliant with the FES requirements, need to be rejected, or they might be unrelated to patient care. So we see a lot of test messages, a lot of administrative keep alive messages in the system. So we had to clean those out. We processed those and made sure that they were consistent and contained valid emergency department encounter data, so on and so forth. We eliminated those quality check, quality control check methods. So there's that basic validation and cleanup. After validating, we identified unique emergency department encounters. How did we define that? We define that by the institution, so there's an emergency department. We know who that emergency department is in the transaction. We identified additionally with the patient's medical record number at that site. And finally, we used the date of visit for that. So institution, patient's medical record number, and date of visit. So if a patient came back the next day, same patient, same institution, that would be counted as a different visit. Same patient goes to a different hospital on the same day, different visit. Those three fields determine what a unique visit was. Any transactions that missed any of these fields, and there were some, and I'll show you the numbers, couldn't be definitively uniquely identified, and so they were excluded from the analysis. Unique patients. So we identified unique visits. And again, we could have, we can look at the relationship between visits and patients, but what we needed to do was find all of the unique patients in the system. We have a global patient master person index with a probabilistic record linkage software package. So essentially what we did is we took all of these encounters, all of these unique encounters, and linked that data set to itself and found all of the duplicates, all of the links in there, and we identified all of the unique patients. We used any manner of demographics that were in there. The probabilistic matching package we use is a maximum likelihood estimator, and so we can use a variety of variables in that. And we uniquified our patients, we assigned all patients to a particular patient group, we randomly assigned a unique identifier to that and threw away all the patient identifiers at that point. So once we have valid transactions, unique encounters, unique patients, why am I going through all of this painful detail? Because this is what you really have to do with observational clinical data that's being generated from these hospital systems. Generate summary statistics that I'm going to tell you about. We used a network analysis tool to look at the interconnectedness of each of the emergency departments. It turned out of the 100 and, James, I don't know if it's 106 or 108. James Michaels is here. He runs the FES system. I think we're up to 108 hospitals maybe right now. Of those 100 some, 96 hospitals have had data in the system for 3 years. So those were the hospitals that we used for this study. So we'll get into results now. These are the 96 locations of the 96 emergency departments that contribute data to this analysis across the state of Indiana. So here's the summary. A total of about 42 million transactions were generated during the three-year period. We identified 6 million duplicate or invalid transactions. So these were those text messages. These were the exact same transaction being sent multiple times. We also found another 1.6 million that, again, were missing at least one of those three fields to uniquely identify it as a visit. So when we took out the invalid transactions, we were down to 33.8 million unique transactions. From that, we identified 7.4 million unique encounters. Okay? And from those 7.4 million unique encounters, we identified 2.8 million unique patients. So more than 2.8 million patients accounted for 7.4 million visits over the 3 years, an average of 2.6 visits per patient on average. So this is largely a descriptive evaluation, but with some interesting observations. So this is the total number of ED visits along the x-axis and the number of patients along the y-axis. It's on a logarithmic scale because the numbers are so wide. So the number of patients having just one visit in the system, just to orient you, so the number of patients having one visit in the system is a little over a million. There was one patient in the system who had 385 emergency department visits over the course of 3 years. Now, I don't know the details of this patient, but remember we said we did another study back in 2003. Back in 2003, we found a person who over the course of 1 year was seen more than 200 times in the emergency department. And we did some evaluation of that person, and it turns out this is where data is amazing. This person had two conditions that might predispose somebody to high utilization. The first condition isn't surprising. The person had sickle cell disease, and sicklers often have a lot of pain. They need pain control. They come to the ED when they go into a crisis. And but 200 times in a year, why would they do that? The second diagnosis seals the deal. Their second diagnosis was schizophrenia. So here's a patient with a severe illness who can't manage their disease. And so it may be the case, maybe this is just purely a drug seeker, but this might be another interesting case. But if you look at this too, I mean, even, you know, there are a number of patients, you know, so we're down into the 100 here. So if you even look at the cutoff of 100, look at all these patients that are visiting so many times in the emergency department. And these small number of patients account for a very large amount of healthcare resources. And identifying them can be very important. But that's a side story to what we're talking about here today. So we broke this down by, so this one was total visits. This is the total number of unique emergency departments visited by a single patient. So most patients only visited one emergency department, but again, we have a frequent flyer. One person visited 38 emergency departments in 3 years. So we did do a little bit of investigation on this patient, and they are a drug seeker. But you can see there's some interesting patterns here. And again, there's a lot of folks out there who are being seen in a lot of different emergency departments. One of the key take-home messages from this evaluation that really surprised us is that the patients, you can think about this analysis from the perspective of patients, or you can think about this from the perspective of visits, okay? The patients who had multiple visits in this, so the 2.8 million patients, about 22% of those 2.8 million people, about 22% of them had multiple visits. But If you look at visits, of the 7.5 million visits, 40% of those visits were by people who had data in multiple locations. So if I'm an ED physician, 4 out of every 10 patients that I see in my emergency department has data somewhere else. 4 out of 10. Patients are moving around, particularly in the emergency department. That's a major finding. 40% of the data I need to care for somebody is elsewhere. At least in the emergency department in Indiana. More statistics. This is the proportion of visits by patients with data residing in multiple institutions. So what we did is we broke it down by emergency department and asked, okay, for a given emergency department, how many of your visits were by patients with data residing elsewhere? So there's actually one ED in Indiana where 70% of their visits, this is the visit slide, 70% of their visits, their patients have data elsewhere. These likely are in the more highly populated areas where there are lots of EDs to choose from, and you might see people moving around quite a bit. Down here, when you are a smaller hospital, when you have a lower volume, when you're near the state border and you're not a part of our health information exchange, you'll probably have a tighter catchment of patients. And that's what these hospitals represent, smaller, more remote, smaller catchment. So this previous slide was proportion of visits. This is proportion of patients, just again another way to slice it, how many patients have or how many visits have, and I don't want to belabor that point, see the similar slide. So this is the network diagram showing the connectedness between emergency departments. Nearly every single emergency department in Indiana has a connection to every other emergency department by shared patients. This is almost a perfectly connected graph. And you can see clusters of trading areas. This is not geographic clustering. This is clustering by who shares patients. So this might be a medical trading area here, another one here. You know, if I was maybe thinking a little bit, you know, something about the geography of Indiana, this is probably the central Indiana region right here. But there are other regions that have tighter connections. But just about every emergency department in the state is connected to every other emergency department by shared patients. So all healthcare is not local. I've already said it's not local. I've already summarized the 2.8 million patients, 7.4 million ED visits, high degree of interconnectivity, 40% of ED visits were for patients having data at multiple institutions. I think that's profound. Back to policy. ONC is contemplating two different types of architectures. There is one called the NIN Connect Gateway, and there's a NIN Direct. Direct is the notion that when I see a patient in my clinic, I can choose to send this patient's data to somebody else. I have to know where this patient's going to be going, I have to know who the provider is, and then I'll send the data to them. That's NIN Direct. That's what ONC is contemplating and advancing right now. NIN Connect, which is a little bit older, a different architecture, is more of a pull model where you say, I see this patient in front of me and I need to know something about them. Why don't I reach out and get data from others? By virtue of the fact we see that patients are seen everywhere for emergency department care, and by the way, they're seen at 1 o'clock in the morning when clinics are closed, and so there's no human being sitting at a computer ready to push the NIN Direct button to send that data, NIN Direct fails. NIN Direct does not work. NIN Direct is the wrong solution. Nobody's talking about this. Nobody's looking at data to contemplate the architecture for our nation's healthcare system. NIN Direct fails. NIN Connect might work if it's architected for pull, so that when the patient shows up in the emergency department and they've got data elsewhere, they can say, okay, I've got John Smith here. There's an aggregating function out there that can pull data when human beings aren't pushing it. That may work. That hasn't been architected yet. These are the sorts of questions we need to be addressing, thinking about doing a lot more analysis on. So if we do the peer-to-peer push, then indirect push, so we have each peer-to-peer node, we've got 96 emergency departments. That amounts to 4,560 different point-to-point interfaces. Not scalable, it's not manageable. And so again, just some food for thought and discussion. So data access is suboptimal on a peer-to-peer network, particularly for ED care. And this can happen for a lot of things. Any urgent visit, often unless you're a scheduled C-section or a scheduled induction for delivery, there are many times when you show up into the healthcare system without knowing you're going to be there 3 hours before. And so the ability to aggregate and have this data available is critical. And so we need to be thinking about how we're building out our nationwide system. So a lot we can, let me talk about some limitations here. We captured approximately 97% of the ED visits for the state. There's still some hospitals that aren't connected, so these numbers may vary. One of the big limitations of this study is some hospital systems are large and they are beginning to have more integrated IT systems. So they effectively act as one large institution. We didn't account for that in our analysis. That's something we'd like to do. We only capture the data from our health information exchange, so we think our crossover rates are actually the lower bound. That 40% number, I think, is the lower bound. Because we've got Evansville, we've got folks over on the Cincinnati side, patients are probably going to other hospitals outside the state, outside of our health information exchange. If that's the case, then this crossover figure is actually the lower limit. And we think it may be closer to 50% than 40%. This is only for ED care, not inpatient or outpatient crossover. Maybe crossover rates among the EDs is greater. Maybe there's something different there. We want to look at that. We can look at that with our health information exchange. So a lot of other things we can talk about. We're contemplating using, now that we have this model of patients' movement across our state, we've got some folks in Bloomington who are interested in modeling, all sorts of disease spread, so influenza spread. When you have syndromic surveillance data like this, and you know where patients move, and we also know what their chief complaint and actually what their clinical data is in our health information exchange, you can begin to develop models of disease spread. You can look at other types of healthcare utilization. And our health information exchange is very interested in looking at and identifying those high utilizers as well. So how do we sustain electronic health data sharing? It's by recognizing multiple use cases here. It's by recognizing this data informs policy on architecture development. This data allows us to identify high healthcare utilizers. This data can help us build better disease spread models, so on and so forth. So it's thinking about all the different ways that this data can be useful. So I'm going to stop there. This is mostly a descriptive study with some interesting implications. Mark Overhage and J.T. Fennell helped out a great deal with this project, and I wanted to acknowledge them as well. So I'll stop there.
Questions?
Sean, that was a great presentation. Nice use of those data. Could you talk a little bit more about this push-pull piece? Because it seems like, there still needs to be an intermediary, perhaps, like an HIE. I mean, do people still need to push to some health information exchange type environment so that then you can do the pull part? And second question, is there sort of general agreement as to what sort of the key data need to be that need to be available to support this type of interchange?
So first question is, isn't push still necessary even if you're in a full environment? Absolutely, the data has to be mobilized, but in the direct model, it's up to the discretion of the individual, and humans actually have to be present and make that decision. So in addition to seeing the 40 patients that day and finishing all of my notes, and I often, my wife's a family physician, and since they got an EMR 3 years ago, I now sit in bed with her until 10 o'clock at night while she finishes her notes every day. So any additional burden like this poses is problematic. So there's different types of push. There's automatic push, which is just send us everything. Right, just automatically set up the interface so your clinical data automatically flows into. So, yes, a transmission of data is still necessary. And so I heard you say something too. Isn't an intermediary still necessary, like in HIE? The NIN direct model, it's actually email. It's secure email. They're using the SMTP protocol. So what they're contemplating is essentially everybody emailing to one another through a secure fashion. That's an indirect and push. So in addition to your regular email, now you have another email address. I'm being a little facetious, but that's the model. And so your second question, remind me, was data elements. So As a maintainer of a health information exchange, more data is better. Whatever you can send is great. We do like to know the registration stream, so we'd like to know when a patient was seen, where, and then the clinical data for those encounters. So I know that's vague, but anything you can send is useful, because you never know what you're going to need.
So, as someone who recently had to deal with a small rural town hospital, that emergency department, where basically the hospital was a landlord and everything was contracted out, so the ER docs, the radiology, the crutches, you know, everything was, the medical supply was all contracted out, okay? And the idea of having these medical records available to all these people really doesn't make that a very charming picture to me of making it available so freely. You know, the fact of the matter is that, you know, we've got a lot of ED overuse, because people don't have primary care, and everybody's trying to really make it a system of primary care, and then you refer them, and the doctors are all tied into the hospitals, you know. So doesn't it make sense to, like, reify that particular relationship and, you know, maybe let the hospital have a limited open sharing within the hospital and its affiliated physicians, and then let them staff the 24-hour-a-day button pusher, you know, who decides whether it's legitimate or not?
I'll ask you a question back. Why do you think that would be sustainable?
Well, because I wouldn't object to have people who are responsible for my medical care deciding that somebody else needed my information to provide me with medical care, okay? But if you tell me that you're going to make, you know, just have, you know, well, this person is certified as a provider and therefore they're going to have access, you know, which is what I was hearing in the ELR context, you know, I'm going to start talking about black helicopters and stuff like that, so.
I'm not sure how this person who pushes the button knows you personally and knows when it's appropriate for you. I'm not sure that the solution you propose is actually any is superior to anything else. I do want to say, this is the privacy and security religious discussion that we're moving into. And so what I might suggest is, I love talking about privacy and confidentiality, incredibly important. There's very important questions to be answered here. But I might suggest that we're not going to answer these questions today. And so maybe if there are other particular questions pertaining to you know, the overlap and those sorts of things, we might go there. I'm happy to continue talking about privacy and security, but I've seen where that road goes.
Well, your talk really, again, underscored the value of all of the hospitals being willing to share and provide their data, and that's an issue that varies nationwide. I was wondering, have there been policies or what has been done in Indiana to create an environment where these hospitals are willing to all share their data?
Sure. We started small. We proceeded incrementally, and we every step of the incremental pathway, we showed value. Our health information exchange started with the five big hospital systems in Indianapolis, and we started with sharing data in the emergency department. We went to the CMOs and the CEOs and said, wouldn't it make sense for your emergency department physician to have better information, to make better decisions, to get better outcomes? And I said, yeah, let's give this a shot. We did it, we evaluated it, we showed that you could reduce costs and provide better care, and they said, oh, this data sharing stuff makes a lot of sense. Our second use case, we went back and said, hey, you know that case reporting that you're doing to public health that your infection control personnel really, you know, don't like doing, your doctors do a lousy job with? What if we help automate that process and send the data to public health? And they said, oh, sure, worked the first time, why don't we do it this one? If we had reversed that and tried to start with public health, I wouldn't be standing here today. We wouldn't have a health information because they would have rejected that outright, I think, because unfortunately, if we're going to be honest with ourselves, public health is not the first priority on clinical health care's list. So every step of the way, we added value, and we evaluate that, document it. We do both. We show what works and what doesn't, and we're very honest about what doesn't work as well. So how do we create the environment? We showed value. I've got a talk on our security system. It's a multi-layer access control system. We absolutely have to have a Fort Knox around this data. Or the minute one patient's record shows up at the Indianapolis Star newspaper, we're done. Close up shop, we're over. So we recognize the need for privacy and security and appropriate access to the system. But the CEOs have to be able to tell their board, what value are we getting out of this information exchange? Absolutely.
I thought your network analysis was just fascinating. And it made me think, what about all the patients who commute into Marion County every day and might be seeing a facility at work and at home and that sort of thing? I'm wondering what else you might be thinking of doing with that. It's a hot area among statisticians right now.
Yeah. So we've just opened this can. We've got a lot of thoughts about where we might go with this, but I mean, that's one I hadn't thought about. Where are the commuters here? Who are the people who are, you know, what are the characteristics of individuals who actually have the multiple visits at different EDs? We did look at some, like, as I mentioned, the multiple unique ED visits. The top five, we looked at those, and almost all of those were drug seekers, but there are going to be some probably in the gray zone a little further down where there are patterns that emerge that would be interesting to look at. But there's all sorts of, you know, now we're looking at patient behavior here. And what is it that motivates a person to go to different places? We do want to look, do we see this in the outpatient setting? I think it's not as much. There's not as much overlap in the outpatient setting because I think there is more of that medical home concept. What about the inpatient? Don't know. So I think there's a whole slew of questions to be answered here. Again, that we don't know, and we're building a nationwide system without understanding actually how the data moves, how patient moves, and all of that. And we're charging forward with our design, you know, really without as much information as we should have.
I've also seen these really long tails of frequent flyers, and don't you get into a position of, shouldn't this hospital know about this? And don't you feel like you've got evidence that someone should have to chase down problems of abuse? Are you is your institution in a position to share that kind of information?
So Many EDs, when I practiced in the emergency department, we had a little paper list back in the doctor's office where we'd write down the drugs. And we knew who they were. And they often come back. And this is a mental illness as much as anything else. These people come back and they try different methods. Well, it's a headache today, it's a back pain tomorrow, I might be dying, you know, and so people are going to receive care and there are different providers in place, so they may not see the same person every time, particularly in large organizations. So are folks aware of the problem? Absolutely. Is there a lot we can do about it, or are they afraid to do something about it because they might be sued? This is a known issue.
But can you share with them?
Share with other hospitals,
yeah,
that information. We haven't done it with ED data. In the state of Indiana, we have a system that tracks all narcotic drug prescriptions. So when I see a patient and they're telling me a fishy story, I can actually log into Indiana's system and say, oh, really? You haven't had any narcotics recently? Here I see 2 days ago you were there. So there is some data sharing going on right now. Are people sharing the visit rates? Would it be really great, we've talked about this as well, wouldn't it be really great to have a reminder that says, doctor, this patient was just seen yesterday, and by the way, they've had 15 visits over the last 4 weeks. That actually is important clinical information. I think we could justify it. But we're not doing it today, and I'm not sure if there is any.
Other questions? So I have one. I was curious because this whole discussion about policy and the awesome findings that you both have shown really about these data and how there's a lot of value, but there's a lot, it's pretty messy and there's a lot to work out. I think if I understand the landscape, Regan Street is, there's a few people who have a similar setup, but most people are choosing, I think, the sort of just have a master patient index and let the data live somewhere else. And I think if I understand your setup, you have like a data repository. Is that correct?
Well, the two alternatives you just described aren't mutually exclusive.
Okay, so you have a sort of a hybrid. You have, so, okay. The reason I asked the question is because when I was in Virginia and they were talking about their design for their HIE, it was the one that I described with the master patient index and all the data somewhere else. And it was really good if you were a clinician who was asking for one person's record and it went out and found it and brought it back to you. But it's not so good for the full data push thing that you're kind of describing where you might, you know, for public health and from syndromics perspective, we were saying, look, we want more than just the one record and we'll take down your system kind of thing. And so I'm just wondering, because I agree, nobody's really talking about it. They just kind of move ahead like they know what they're talking about. But have you had these discussions at higher levels, and what kind of response have you gotten, and what's going on?
Farzad Mostashari is a good friend.
Right.
And I shared with him these results. And he said, well, we know that this doesn't work in the ED. So that's where we are right now. So are we talking about this? Absolutely. I'm happy to share this information with anyone who's willing to listen. I don't think there's a single architectural approach to such a complex healthcare system. And I think most people recognize that. I just want to make sure that whatever we do build for our nation actually has value and is usable and reusable for different things.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. I mean, we're under a tight timeline for funding reasons and a lot of reasons, but still, I was just curious about kind of where the conversation was, because I agree that it's important.
Thank you.
Anything else? Thank you guys so much.